please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor. Marcy's law gives rights to victims, but not to prosecutors. And
Let's go to the Second District's opinion.
Okay.
And their argument that the Second District reads the word other out of the law.
Well, I have three problems with the way the state is responding to that, which is, first of all, I think the Second District and the state both conflate standing with representation. I have no standing to raise any issue before this court. Clients have standing, lawyers don't. The prosecuting attorney is a lawyer, not a client. The state is the client. And the general rules of standing, which I argued both in the Court of Appeals and this court, are that a party has to have an injury. And the state doesn't have an injury when the right is solely belonging to the victims. Now, getting on to that point of where
Counselor, isn't the state harmed because the statute hasn't been followed and part of, either under Marcy's law or the statute, part of the aspect of punishment hasn't been meted out here? And so the state traditionally appeals those things.
Well, 2920 and 18 does have an aspect of punishment to it, but they didn't argue that. And if they had argued that, I'd be in a very different position.
So this is just kind of a procedural screw-up by the state. They forgot to mention the statutes in their brief.
Well, I think it's yes, but it's also more than that, because I think the state kept saying, well, we could have done a better job in our reply brief. They didn't file a reply brief, either in this court or in the Court of Appeals. They didn't, not that they could have done a better job, they didn't file one. They didn't even respond to the standing arguments in the Court of Appeals. They didn't respond.
I don't know that I've heard this before, but the argument today about, well, we put it in our notice of appeal.
Well, I've never heard the argument that I can preserve an argument in my notice of appeal, and that's the first time that I've ever heard that argument in this case, an argument in this court. Maybe it's in their brief somewhere that I missed it, but I think that's part of the problem. When you don't get a reply briefs, you don't get to see what the other side's response is to your arguments until here. But I've never seen anything that says I can preserve an argument by putting it in my notice of appeal. And when it comes to representation, the statute, if the state says they want to represent, they haven't represented. At no stage have they represented the victim in this case. On page 849 of the transcript, they said that they were making their argument on behalf of the state of Ohio. In the Court of Appeals, they filed their notice of appeal on behalf of the state of Ohio. Their briefs have all been on behalf of the state of Ohio. And that's why I know Marcy's law is a radical change in how the system works, but if they want to act as the victim's representative, they have to actually represent the victim.
Counsel, if you set Marcy's law aside and you're just looking at the statute, and the judge hands out a sentence and ignores restitution, okay, doesn't award restitution, and clearly there's a victim and clearly the victim has medical bills, is that grounds for appeal by the state?
Statutory, they have the grounds to appeal, but they shouldn't win automatically because the trial court, first of all, doesn't have to take just because the trial court doesn't have to make any findings whatsoever. So I think we should presume if there's silence, just like
it doesn't have to make any findings on restitution.
Correct.
Okay. So they don't have to say no restitution. They can just remain silent. Okay.
Yes, we presume regularity then.
All right. Okay. So they appeal it, and there's nothing for the Court of Appeals to go on. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the state would have to overcome the presumption of regularity in that case. And just because the victim submits a piece of unauthenticated pieces of paper saying he gives unsworn statements saying this is my bill, the trial court has no obligation to accept that.
Except that this trial court said, I need something more.
Right, and the issue of whether if the victim goes before a judge and says, I have one of the best insurance policies around, VA's insurance, and they don't cover anything. Now that is, the trial court has if there's an insurance coverage in the case, that means that's a loss the victim hasn't suffered. That's something the insurance company can suffer. And arguably under Marcy's law, the insurance company is the victim as to that point. But the victim has not incurred $177,000 in loss.
We don't know what the victims incurred here.
Right, but the victim also has to support how much they actually cost. And if there's an offset out there.
Okay, let me, was there a restitution hearing in the trial court?
Yes, it was a part of the sentencing hearing. Well, there's no separate, here is the restitution hearing. Restitution was part of the sentencing hearing. The victim got up and said, I experienced these losses. It was in the PSI. So the victim, yes, it was part of the sentencing hearing. It was not a very...
Is that the way it should be, just part of the sentencing? Or if there's a true issue, such as here, and unanswered questions, there's nothing to say the judge doesn't continue the sentencing for hearing on restitution.
And if there had been, if the state had asked for that or the victim had asked for that, then we'd appeal that under abuse of discretion. Here, the state would have to meet the plain error burden, which means they'd have to show that they plainly would have won if they'd held a full hearing, and they can't do that on this record. And so Marcy's Law and the statute doesn't give the victim, doesn't say, present the evidence you have, and if it's not enough, you get a second hearing. You get one hearing, and that's what they had here. If the state thought they deserved a continuance, they should have asked for it. I also think that's part of why representation is so important. It's hard to imagine a civil lawyer who's actually representing, who's taken on the awesome responsibility of representing a human being, bringing their client in front of a judge who's known as an insurance law specialist before he got on the bench, and with your client claiming they don't have any coverage by some of the best in medical insurance in the business, especially when one of the underlying trial issues in the case went to the victim's credibility, and the victim's greatly exaggerating his the peacefulness of his relationship, even though police had been called, he'd broken bones of a previous girlfriend, threatened people. This victim did not walk into the sentencing hearing with full credibility. Yet, and you can be victims are human beings. You can still be a victim of a crime and have the normal flaws many human beings have. But that's what happened here, I believe.
Mr. Hardwick, normally if a defendant is asserting on an appeal both statutory violations and constitutional violations, if we can resolve the statutory, we often don't get to the constitutional, correct?
Correct.
So is it any different when the constitutional provision doesn't really concern the defendant but the victim? Because it looks like the state is trying to sort of hybrid the analysis of both the saying that there's a right, constitutional right for restitution. But if we can resolve the question of the state's ability to bring this appeal without Marcy's Law, are we okay to do that?
Well, I think you could if the state actually bothered to cite the statute in the Court of Appeals, which they never did. And the notice of appeal doesn't count as making an argument. They never made a stat. They never, their brief in the Court of Appeals doesn't cite a single provision of the Ohio Revised Code, not one.
Isn't in front of us, though, the proposition of law standing under the Constitution,
right,
only?
Correct. And again, I think it's a convoluted proposition of law because it conflates standing with representation. And there's a separate question. Do they have standing? Does the state of Ohio, normally the state of Ohio and the prosecuting attorney are essentially the same thing, interchangeable words. In this case, they aren't. We're talking about this prosecuting attorney, and does the prosecuting attorney have the ability to represent the victim? And here, even if they did have, they do have that ability, they never asserted it. And I think that's very important because everyone has the right to, the victim also has a right to know, is this person my lawyer? Does it represent the state? The previous version of the Constitution, the statute, said that the state could assert a victim's rights so long as it didn't conflict with their representation of the public's interest. But if they're going to take on and actually represent a victim, and that's the language of Marcy's Law, represent. When an attorney represents someone, that is an enormous responsibility. And I know most prosecutors aren't used to having individual clients.
Well, let me ask you, so here it's an odd case because the prosecutor didn't cite the statute, just cited Marcy's Law. Ordinarily, in these cases, the prosecutor is going to cite Marcy's Law, and they're going to cite the statute. Under your theory today, am I correct that unless the prosecutor files a notice or something that they are actually representing the victim, that they're not entitled to raise any arguments under Marcy's Law? They can only raise statutory arguments.
Correct. And if they want,
maybe you're right, but be very different than what's happening.
Correct.
Now.
And I think Marcy's Law meant for things to happen very differently than they're currently happening. Part of the reason we have Marcy's Law is that victims and prosecutors don't always represent victims, and that's important. Sometimes that benefits the defendant, and sometimes it doesn't. In domestic violence cases, we want prosecutors to be able to prosecute over the objection of victims. But sometimes victims, especially crime, theft against a family member, very well might not want a prosecutor to go forward.
We do have a statute, I don't have it all in front of me, we do have a statutory scheme that gives, even without Marcy's Law, prosecutors certain duties in regard to victims, right?
Right.
I mean, they have to notify them of things, they have to, I'm not sure all the nuances, but there's certainly, prosecutors have victim witness units, they do, and their statutory requirements relating to victims.
Although those also always say that it doesn't matter if the prosecutor doesn't do it or not. Every one of those provisions says, well, we want the prosecutors to do this, but in the end, if they don't do it, it doesn't matter, because Marcy's Law, the quantitative difference in Marcy's Law is the victims actually have rights that they can assert in court. And if the prosecutor before didn't do that, they just didn't do it, and it was just kind of too bad for the victim. Now they're actually, the victims have rights that they didn't have before. So I think that's a qualitative difference between what we used to have. And I do want to briefly talk about, and I know this is, the general provision of Marcy's Law talks up other has three ways the victim can be represented, and that's the victim themselves, attorney for the government, or other representative. For some reason, in the appellate provision, the drafters of Marcy's Law left out the prosecuting attorney, and that's...
Well, I mean, that's arguable, right? I mean, they're both kind of, you can make arguments for either reading, but your reading has the problem that's of this word "other" in the first clause.
It does, but then their problem is that it doesn't exist in the second one, and...
But under your reading, attorney for the government would have to mean a different thing in the first clause than the second clause, right? Because in the first clause, it would have to include a victim's lawful representative. In the second clause, it would not.
Well, we win either way, because if the prosecutor isn't the victim's other lawful representative, then we win because they don't have the power to do it, and if they are the victim's representative, well, then the state, then the prosecuting attorney never availed themselves of that. And it's also important, the victim also has the right, walking into that courtroom, to know, is this person my lawyer, or is he the state's lawyer? Who does this person represent? And one thing a lawyer for a victim would have done in a case like this, a conscientious lawyer would have said, okay, let me explain to me your insurance coverage, show me what it is. Let's not make sure we're telling the trial court the truth about this. Because in one thing, this victim, if the victim wasn't telling the truth, the last thing they want is a successful appeal in this case to go back to the trial court and have them find out they weren't telling the trial court the truth the first time around. And if the prosecuting attorney were representing the victim, the prosecuting attorney would have to take that into account.
We're not the only, there's a lot of other states now that have a Marcy's Law. Do those states require the prosecutor to separately file a notice if they're representing, to raise any arguments under Marcy's Law on appeal?
I haven't seen that textual analysis done in the other states that I found, but I do think we need to give that word "represent" meaning. That's, in representing a human being is a sacred duty of a lawyer, and if they're going to say represent, you have to represent, and that person has the right to know that you are doing that. And also, I know that it's important to point out that the Second District so far is the only court to address this issue at all. So if it may be at this, given the way the states litigated this, their failure to litigate any claims in the trial court other than a general objection, and then switching in the Court of Appeals, and given that this is the only time this has been raised, that this may be a good case to improvidently allow and to wait for a better result. But in the end, clients, lawyers, judges have the right to know who's representing whom, and if the state, if a prosecuting attorney wants to represent a victim, they should take that responsibility on and do it seriously. They have not done that here, and I ask this court to affirm that.
Absent Marcy's law, could they say that they're representing the victim on an appeal?
No.
Okay. But you have to read the second part of Section 7 in Marcy's law, I mean, that section of the Constitution, to allow them to appeal, even though they're not mentioned.
Well, the victims, I'm sorry, who Your Honor's referring to as they?
The prosecutor.
The prosecutor can always file a notice of appeal of a final judgment. Then the question is,
that's under statute.
Right.
Okay. But under Marcy's law, you know, the fact that in the second sentence when they're talking about appeal, it says the other representative, but that representative refers to the representative, I would imagine, that's in the first, the victim's other lawful representative. Could be a guardian. Could be a power of attorney in some form. It could be, that's the other lawful representative.
It doesn't say that. And when you talk about attorney, who can actually file an appeal on behalf of someone else, then that means you file the notice.
A guardian. If this person, the victim was incompetent for some reason, if in a coma someplace, you got a guardian. The guardian's representing the victim's interest.
But then their notice of appeal would say the victim under the guardianship of so-and-so hereby appeals.
Precisely.
And they didn't do that here.
Yeah, I understand that. It wasn't necessary. But what I'm saying is that when they're talking about who can appeal, the victim or the victim's lawful representative may petition the Court of Appeals. Those are the only two. You would agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
When they take on the duty of representation, they actually have to take that on, and I ask this court to enforce that. We don't give people kind of lawyers or half lawyers. We give them lawyers, and that's what we should. If people either don't have a kind of lawyer or half a lawyer, they either have a lawyer or they don't. And the victims under Marcy's law deserve a lawyer representing them.
Okay, but my question is, where would the prosecutor have the authority to represent a victim on appeal here? You're saying they have to let them know their attorney. You got to let the victim know that I'm your attorney. I don't see anything in Section B that allows for the attorney, the state, to represent the victim on appeal. Okay,
but
I'm getting confused by that you've got to let a victim know that you're representing them and it's a sacred honor and all that. They can't do it.
Right, and yes, sure, that is correct. And my second point was in the alternative, and I should have been clearer than that.
All right, okay, thank you. Your time's up. Counsel, you've got a little under 2 minutes.
To avoid sort of conflating the two issues, the merits of the appeal are really not yet ripe for this court. The Second District did not consider whether or not there was any validity to the claim that the trial court erred. Standing and standing alone is what this case is about. Mr. Hardwick suggested that the state does not have standing because it has not been harmed. Well, this court, I think it was Aguirre, State v. Aguirre, said that while the primary goal of restitution is to compensate the victim, it also served punitive purposes. So it is always in the state's interest and the state's obligation to ensure that trial courts follow, be it a statutory law or a constitutional provision. It is always the state's goal and objective and right to question sentences that are contrary to law. And we would submit that failing to include an order of restitution renders the sentence contrary to law, which gives the state standing to appeal and a demonstrable harm. The suggestion that all of this could have been fixed if the state had filed a notice of representation, I don't see anything that would require that notice. Implicit in the record is that the victim wanted the state to advocate on its behalf and wanted the state to represent it. After this order was denied, after restitution was denied, the state voiced its objection. By all indications, the victim was right there. The victim did not speak up and say, they don't represent my interests, I don't want them advocating on my behalf. It would be implicit that the state, the prosecutor, is representing the interests of the victim when restitution is denied and when the denial of that restitution then also renders the sentence contrary to law.
Where in the record is it upon request of the victim? That's the argument you're making. You said the word implicit, but where in the record does it show upon request of the victim?
Where in the record?
Yeah.
I suppose what I'm referring to is the transcript from the sentencing hearing.
Okay.
After the victim made his victim impact statement was when the trial court began asking questions about how these medical expenses came about. Do you or do you not have private insurance? Why won't the VA pay for these expenses? When the trial court then said, I'm not saying I don't believe you. I trust what you're saying. I just am perplexed as to why the VA wouldn't pay these expenses. So therefore, I'm going to award no restitution. The state then voiced an objection.
I understand that. I read that.
Yeah,
and I'm asking, where's the request of the victim?
There is no formal request of the victim. What I'm suggesting is that when the state objected, it was objecting first because it believed restitution was due as a matter of law, and believed that restitution, not awarding restitution, did a disfavor and a disservice to the victim. So by voicing an objection on behalf of the victim, in which it explained to the court, we disagree with your assessment that Mr. Patton needs more proof, needs to provide more documentation, we object to your findings, I'm suggesting that it is implicit in that it is making those objections on behalf of the victim, because ultimately the victim is the one who is owed the money.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You're going to be notified of our decision.